Saints for a touchdown.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Welcome inside Black and Gold, another pre-draft edition, but we're getting closer and closer to the big day. Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak here with you and anxious to get the first round started. I know that there's been all that speculation leading up to next week.
Yeah, this is the time of year that we keep doing podcasts and keep saying the same thing because there's only so much to talk about. Like, we could come up with like questions and different ways to address it, but we're always going to come back to the same thing.
We're on our mock draft 7.0.
Right. Especially for an episode like this, because there's really no news to speak of over the last several days. So we're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. But this first segment, we are going to get more into draft stuff. We're going to hear from Daniel Jeremiah, the NFL.com analyst. I almost called him an analyst. And he talked about kind of the Saints and their offensive line investment. That's going to be our first time. We're going to talk about that. Second segment, we're going to hear from our friend of the program, Justin Mello. He's going to call in. He's one of the senior analysts for the Draft Network. And as you can imagine, when you have the Draft Network in your title, this is a busy time for you. So
a little bit, right.
We appreciate him making the time. We'll get him on the phone. Don't think he's going to be on camera, but you YouTubers can live with it. And then in the final segment, I got a question on Twitter that I did not have the energy in my body to get into a Twitter debate about whether Derek Carr is a franchise quarterback or not. But hey, we can talk about it on the tube. And I also want to dive into what makes a good Stan, because I feel like it's funny because we made fun of Jameis 101 a lot when Jameis was here. And I think he got a bad rap because in reality, there's Stans for everybody. And he was just an easy target because he was overt about it, which you almost have to give him credit for that. Like, at least he told you what he was. He didn't have some random name with an animated picture that it was like, I wonder if all of his tweets are about this. Oh, there they are. Okay. Anyway, so we'll get back to that. But yeah, the first segment, we can go through a couple things. Shamar John Charles got re-signed. They put him in 27, which how disrespectful to Ike Yadam. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that again. And then Charlie Smith got his number, which it just feels right that we go through the numbers because we spent so much time last week talking about the numbers. He'll be in 39, which is an interesting punter number. I think Lou Headley's also in the 30s, if I recall correctly. But yeah, nothing really to speak of from a signing standpoint. So we're kind of just looking at the draft. And then once we get through the draft, we'll have a much better idea of who they might need to target in free agency.
Yeah, you look at with the signing of John Charles. And it was one of those, they're like, wait a minute, he was on the team last year.
He played late in the year.
Right, yeah, didn't ring a bell at all.
He was in the game against the Falcons because Ike Yadam got hurt, and then Alante Taylor went into the slot, and then I can't remember, someone else got hurt, and he actually was out there. Take that for what it is. They like him, so they brought him back. It kind of reminds me that, like, last year, like, if you recall, this is the time of year where they re-signed Ike Yadam and everyone was like, he didn't really do much last year, but they clearly like him because they brought him back. So, hey, maybe he's this year's Ike Yadam. I don't know. He's in that number. Maybe 27 is the magic number for those cornerbacks that you expect nothing out of and get a contribution from. I don't know.
Yeah, which Shamar, obviously still a young cat. He's 25 years old out of App State, fifth round pick in, 2021?
Yep. Two App State guys on the roster. Can you name the other one?
Why can't I think of it? Who is it?
DeMarco Jackson, also a fifth round pick. So they can hang out.
Right.
Talk about, upstate North Carolina. That's where App State is, right? It's North Carolina. Anyway, it's Appalachians. But all right, let's go forward here. So, Daniel Jeremiah did his typical pre-draft conference call, and I was not on it because I have sat on that conference call, those conference calls so many, enough times, waited an hour and a half, and then given up. So now I just let other people do it. But I do go through and listen to it. And there was a good question about the Saints. It was from Adam Devine. He's one of the hosts of the Saints Block Party pod, previously Saints Twitter pod, I think. They changed the name.
How does he get in the key to ask a question? Because I've done the same thing as you, where I've been a part of it, and I feel like I've been in line to get a question in, and they never got to me.
Well, that's why I want to give him credit, because this was about, like, I don't know, an hour 40 in. So, like, I have to give him credit for the commitment, because it's more than I have. Like, I get frustrated and I give up after about 90 minutes, because they don't put a list out. They just kind of say, okay, you're up next. You don't know if, like, you're 10 away, 5 away. You're just kind of there. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, it's your question. And you have to kind of, like, slap yourself in the face, wake up and ask it. So I give him all the credit in the world. He waited on there. He asked him a question. It was a good question. And I want to give those guys credit. I think they hate me personally. I don't know. Like, Adam's got me blocked on Twitter. I guess he just blocks everybody. But I appreciate what they do. I appreciate their podcast. Go check it out. They do a good job. And they engage with fans really well. I think podcasts like that are valuable. So, you know, if you want to go check it out, go check it out. But so he's the one asking the question. That's why I'm saying this. So I don't want to give him credit for asking the question before we use it here. But he's going to ask about the offensive line and the investment. I did trim it down a little bit. But we got the crux of it. So here you go.
The Saints have heavily invested in the offensive line, early premium draft capital. And with the draft capital they've invested, you would kind of expect that they should have, like, a top five type of offensive line. And that just hasn't been the case. With players not working out, like Penning and, you know, Reese is serviceable, is it a coaching issue or is it a scouting issue?
I think that's a great question. I would say it's a combination. You know, I don't think you make first round picks really anymore unless your coaches and your personnel department are on the same page for the most part, or else one of you is leaving, right? And whether the coach is on the way out or the GM's on the way out. But I think there's usually alignment when those decisions are made. So I think the blame you can spread around. I think, you know, some of those players, why they didn't work out, I don't think there's any connection to it. When I look through those guys and rolling through that list of names that you just rattled off there, I mean, Penning, like, if we, you know, that's the most recent in terms of the one that you might be already replacing. The size was there, obviously the temperament and the tenacity and the willingness to work and all that stuff was there. He just, you know, balance was an issue for him coming out. And that is has been kind of a killer for him when he's been in the NFL. So that's that particular one. But I don't think you can shy away from it. It's so important. And it's a position group that, it dictates a lot of your success, not only as an offense, but as a team. I don't think you can say, well, we have, you know, it's been a blind spot for us. So let's draft another position so we don't make another mistake. You just got to suck it up and keep swinging. And they've got to get that solved if they're going to be where they want to be. So, I think you got to try and learn your lessons from the mistakes you've made in the past, but they've got to get right back on the horse. And I don't really see how they go any other direction, but, you know, offensive tackle with their first pick and where they are with this draft, they should be able to get that accomplished. But, every organization has issues with certain positions. I've been on organizations, you know, when I was in Baltimore, we couldn't get the receiver thing figured out and they just kept swinging and kept swinging. And then all of a sudden last year you look up and you see Zay Flowers out there. It looks like a superstar. So you got to keep swinging.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting answer in a few ways. And it kind of gets you wondering, okay, did the Saints miss on a couple picks, or are they just bad at drafting the offensive line? Are they just bad at evaluating the offensive line? And it's tough because, while yes, you did have the Trevor Penning pick, you know, Cesar Ruiz, while he's a serviceable guard, is he a first round guard, or did you reach for him? I'd land on the fact that you reached for him, even though it wasn't a terrible pick, because I think he is a entrenched starting right guard, which that's like the baseline that you have to reach. But then you go back and you, like, Ryan Ramczyk was a good pick on the offensive line. I think Andres Pete was a solid pick on the offensive line. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. What are your expectations for a mid-first-round pick? That's got to be in that range, right? You would have preferred for him to be a guard, but you had Teron Armstead, a guy you found in the third round. So he was never going to be your left tackle while Teron was here. So, I mean, I it's tough because it's not like you can point to it and say, man, they always miss when they draft offensive linemen. But when you do miss, and Scott Shanley talked about this when we had him on WWL recently. I think we played the audio on this podcast. When you miss with those big guys in the first round, it sets you back and it's a problem. And, you know, I don't think they've given up on Trevor Penning yet, but I do think you have to start reevaluating, okay, is our process what it needs to be? And do we need to figure out different ways to evaluate this? Maybe some of the things we're looking for are not working, are not the markers that we thought they were in terms of predicting future success. I think we're going to find out this year, because I think there's a few different ways you could approach this draft pick, this number 14 pick. And do you want a guy you could, hey, is it a ready-made pass protecting left tackle? Is it a road grading right tackle? Is it a guy who's kind of in the middle in J.C. Latham? This road grading right tackle would be Taliese Fuanga. The ready-made pass protector would be Olu Fashanu. Do you trade up? Do you feel really good about a guy and you make sure you go get him? Or do you let the board kind of tell you who you're going to get? It's tough. We're going to find out on Thursday. But one way or the other, you can't miss again. I don't know what happens if you miss again, but I do know that you're going to be in a serious load of trouble if you miss again. And you might be in a load of trouble even if you hit, but that process better be on point this draft.
Yeah, you can't even blame like a small school, you know, being an issue with a guy like Penning, because obviously you brought up a guy, you know, Teron Armstead was a huge pickup for this team and a success. And then you mentioned Ruiz has kind of been a mid-range guy. That's from a big school like Michigan. So, you know, I hear a lot of folks saying that the Saints are targeting these small schools too much and need to stay within, like, the SEC. That's just not the case, I don't feel like, at least.
Well, I mean, if you want to expand it out to other positions, then you're talking about, like, a Marcus Davenport, guys like that. But
sure.
At the offensive line, yeah, I mean, Ryan Ramczyk was Wisconsin, Andres Pete was Stanford, Eric McCoy was Texas A&M. Yeah, Penning is really the only small school guy in terms of a high draft pick. Obviously, Nick Saldivari was Old Dominion, so you could talk about that. But I do think, like, if you're the Saints, if you're a Saints fan and you're hoping for the best, you're looking at this as a glass half full thing, it's the development was not what you needed it to be, and hopefully you have fixed that issue. Because that's really the only fix that the Saints have implemented beyond, you know, adding a couple, you know, scouting pieces that can give you some fresh insights and fresh eyes. I think Cody Rager is out of the door and he went to Denver. So you have some different inputs that you might not have had previously. But the real only significant change you have made, other than maybe, hey, their process changes somewhere that we can't see it, is you've got a new offensive line coach. You've got a new offensive coaching staff, and you're hoping that kind of jumpstarts some of the development that you didn't see last year from Trevor, and that maybe kind of stalled a little bit with Caesar, and that you can see from a rookie that you bring in. Now, I will say that, you know, we talked a lot about this. The Saints have put themselves in a precarious position in regard to the offensive line, in that, man, they have some serious depth needs that, you know, because an injury cropped up, which you should be planning ahead for injuries. I don't think they have been as much as they should be. But you happen to be in a draft where, you know, in 2022, you would not be able to get these offensive tackles at 14, any of them. In 2022, when there was no quarterbacks, really, the wide receiver class was really strong, but, you know, you need multiple positions to push down these tackles the way that will be happening on Thursday. And you happen to be in a draft where three quarterbacks are guaranteed to go in the top five. Another quarterback will probably go in the top 10 in J.J. McCarthy. You have three wide receivers that will probably go in the top 10 in Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze. So that means that these top-end tackles that would probably be in the top five in another draft year are going 8, 10, 12, 14. So you've lucked out if you're the Saints in terms of being in that range where you don't have to trade up to go get them in the first place. You better hit. And, you know, the question that I meant to ask previously early on, and we never actually said it, can this, how many more bad to middling to mediocre draft classes can this front office survive? And I would say one. I think if you cannot turn things around in 2024 with a board that suits your needs and two picks in the top 45, if you cannot find two starters from that group and at least one that makes an impact as a rookie, that's then you're looking at, you know, you go back to 2017, that draft kind of jump-started everything. Since then, you have really been struggling to find impact players. Like, you got Chris Olave, but you paid a premium to get him. You know, like, there's the you got impacts from a, you know, Carl Granderson that maybe you didn't expect. You got impacts from some defensive players that maybe you didn't expect. But it's the draft classes have not been strong enough. And I think that's got to change this year. And you've got to kind of open your eyes and be like, okay, maybe we do some things differently. Because to me, like, everyone can talk about Derek Carr. You can talk about the free agent signing, some of the issues that in the roster construction and the salary cap management. But to me, the biggest issue has been draft asset management and missing on draft picks and not getting any impact whatsoever from too many draft picks. And so that's got to change this year, or there are going to be changes next year and the year beyond, in my opinion.
You brought up Olave, and yeah, I consider him a success, but I mean, he hasn't put himself
any in of those that wide receivers would have been a success.
He's not in that elite category though of wide receivers right now in the NFL.
I think he is. I disagree.
You put him in that upper tier?
Yes. I put him in the top 10. Yeah. I mean, he's got back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, and he hasn't even really been the focal point of the offense. Like, if he can stay healthy, that's my biggest question with him, is he's a slighter guy, you know, and it's like not a coincidence that he's getting hurt, right? Like, he's got to learn how to protect himself a little better, I think. And people will blame Derek, and sure, maybe Derek has to do a better job of putting him in positions to not take big hits because of the type of receiver he is, in that, you know, he's not a big guy. And so, like, you got to be aware that, hey, we can't hang him out to dry over the middle of the field. You know, he's not going to battle through some of these hits that a Mike Thomas would. But I've been watching the broadcast versions of last year's games. And man, that dude, like I said this as a rookie, he's always open. He's just always open. You just got to get him the ball and let him run. And that's why the fact that he didn't have any yak as a rookie was mind-boggling to me, because it's like he's always standing by himself because he's just able to make cuts that these defenders can't even get near. And I think as a focal point of an offense, you know, I could see him averaging 100 yards a game. So it's really just a matter of how many games he plays.
Yeah. For me, like I said, I think he's a great talent. I would put him top 20, just not my top 10 of wide receivers right now in the NFL.
I mean, he's probably closer to 10 than he is to eight in my opinion. Like, I think he would probably be 10 in my list. Because but that's kind of based on, like, I think he's going to take a big leap this year as the true number one in that offense. And it's just going to be a matter of, okay, how many games can he play? Because I think you just plug 100 yards in for every game, and that's what you're looking at. I don't think he's ever going to be like a 10 to 15 touchdown guy, but I think he's going to rack up yards, he's going to rack up catches, and he's going to move the chains. And it's just going to be about, okay, how can you build around that and make the offense work around that? You got to have a running game. Like, the fact is, he was a 1,000-yard receiver with no running game. And really, you know, in the second half of the season, it was just him and Rashid. You know, like, you don't think defenses were keying on him? So, I don't know. I think with another year with Derek, I think he's going to have a monster season. So, you know, you could say, hey, as of last year, maybe he wasn't a top 10 receiver. But I think going into 2024... And kind of projecting, I would put him in the top 10.
I hope you're right. I'll put that down on my fantasy football board.
Yeah, we'll see. All I know is you got a top wide receiver, got to keep him happy, got to throw him the ball. And so either way, that's not what we're here to talk about. But yeah, I mean, Chris was like one of the biggest wins of the last several years. But again, it's like,
right,
you tried number 10. You could have gone with any of those top wide receivers other than Jameson Williams and feel like, hey, we got a good one here. So, like, that was kind of like drafting on easy mode. But you needed it and you got it. So I'm not going to complain about it. It's just a lot of these picks that you kind of went off the wall with. And, you know, and you can't look at Peyton Turner and say, like, hey, it was a missed evaluation, because we don't know. I mean, like, you can't look in your crystal ball and be like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to get hurt every time he goes on the field. But it would be nice if you could.
No, the Saints would definitely like that information. I don't know what to make of Turner. I know we're going a little off key here, but with him, it's very frustrating, because you feel like there have been those little glimpses of the vision that the Saints saw But again, too far and few between because he's not on the field.
Yeah, and I mean, just to kind of pull it back to the conversation we were talking about, is it an issue with the evaluation?
Yeah.
Or is it just bad luck? And you have you can't, like Daniel was saying, you can't look at a miss and say, well, we're just going to not draft that position again because clearly we can't figure it out. You have to look at your process and say, did we do everything right? Because sometimes you can do everything right and it doesn't work, right? Like sometimes, you know, you make a perfect pass, the receiver runs a perfect route, the ball bounces off your helmet, right? You can't, that's just bad luck. Someone, like something in the process broke down and, you know, you get your cleat caught in the turf and you fell. Like you can't look at that and say, well, we shouldn't run that route anymore. You say, well, that sucks, but what do? You just get back on the horse and try it again because you feel like you did it the right way. And so with a Peyton Turner, I asked Jeff Ireland about this because it's like, it's frustrating. And he basically said, like, yeah, we feel like we nailed that evaluation, but what can you do about that? They feel the same way about Marcus Davenport, right? It was like, we got the guy we thought we wanted, but things happened. So I think that's the same thing with offensive line. It's like, okay, is your look at your process, and if you feel like you nailed the process, then yeah, do it again. But you better be right that you nailed the process, because if you do it again and it ends up failing the same way, then it is your process. So that's why I think this is kind of a make or break draft for this front office, for this scouting department, and for the head coach. Because, you know, like, how many chances do you get?
Not many. NFL stands for not for long. I learned that exactly. Long ago.
Exactly. But all right, let's wrap up that segment, and we'll keep right on the draft. This is Inside Black and Gold. We're going to bring in Justin Mello of the Draft Network, get his input. This guy talks to dozens and dozens and dozens, hundreds of these prospects every year. I don't know where he finds the time, but he always has some great input. Looking forward to it. So stick around on Inside Black and Gold. Subscribe. We will be right back.